Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi. No, I'm not Alan Chartok. I'm David Gustina, usually the producer of this program, but sitting in this week, graciously, for Alan Chartok, who is not with us, but will be back and return next week. Joining us this week, state editor of the Times Union, Casey Seiler. And what a week we're having, Casey. Welcome to the Capital Connection.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so glad to have you here. Well, you know, folks will know a little inside baseball here. You and I have been communicating all day today, or all this morning. This is a Tuesday morning we're recording the program, because while we were trying to set up the schedule, some news came through, and that was that the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, was going to follow through on his threat to set up this Moreland Commission. And he has done that. You have just come from the major press conference where a number of the folks who are going to be involved in this were announced. We've heard about what's coming. And I'm wondering at this point, as you see it, whether lawmakers should be somewhat nervous about what's coming.
Well, the corrupt lawmakers, maybe, for sure. And based on the experience of the last couple of months, that might be a big field of fire, as they say. Of course, all of this is taking place in the context of the corruption scandals that have, you know, run through Albany all through this session, kind of beginning in March with the arrests of John Sampson, a former Democratic Senate leader. You know, so many people, the news that wires have been worn by other lawmakers against lawmakers. Nelson Castro, an assemblyman from the Bronx, resigned, and apparently he had been sort of in harness to the Bronx DA and the U.S. Attorney's Office for several years. So it's really been a remarkable kind of set of months.
And it was really the U.S. Attorney's Office that set this all in motion by these moves, right?
Right, exactly. The U.S. Attorney's Office has definitely been kind of in the lead on this round of corruption scandals. And really, I think you would say over the last couple of years, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the feds have taken the lead.
And it made it so that the governor couldn't ignore it.
Well, at the very end of the session, the governor proposed three pieces of legislation: tightening up ethics enforcement, clamping down on corruption, and also kind of changing the campaign finance rules and the campaign finance system. Now, none of those pieces of legislation were acted upon. Kind of the great takeaway, or negative takeaway, I guess you would say, at the end of this session is that two of the governor's biggest initiatives, the push to clamp down on public corruption and the women's equality agenda, were both stymied. The women's equality agenda looks like it might have at least a 9/10 future, and we can get into that later if you want to.
Maybe,
but the public corruption agenda never really went anywhere. Partly because of a failure to agree on the various packages that legislative leaders set up, and partly because the governor really insisted upon including public financing of campaigns, a sort of opt-in system, as one of his proposals. Republicans aren't the only ones, but they're sort of the primary,
predictably so,
yes, objectors to that, because I think many of them see it. They have said as much, that they see it as kind of unilateral disarmament in the money wars, where Republicans have a big kind of cash advantage. So the failure to act on the legislators' part has now driven the governor to appoint a Moreland Commission. The Moreland Act, which we've heard a lot about over the course of Governor Cuomo's tenure in office, is a century-old law that essentially allows the governor to impanel, to set up a commission, to look at pretty much any operation of a state agency or any kind of expenditure of public resources. And because so much public money, either as a member item or as an appropriation that is kind of selected and chopped up by the legislature, ends up going through various state agencies, it really gives the governor kind of broad power to kind of look wherever he wants to, or assign a panel to
look wherever
he wants to.
And since he can't investigate the Senate or the Assembly, it's an end run around that, isn't it, in some way?
Yeah, it's a little bit of what I think you would call a bank shot, that he can't directly investigate the operations of the legislature, but he can investigate whatever kind of use of public resources they might make. He can also investigate things like, for example, the Board of Elections. And in the run-up to this announcement, there had been a lot of talk that this panel was going to be targeted on the operation of the Board of Elections, which its enforcement is seen as something of a joke. You've got violations that kind of go unpunished for years and years and years. Pedro Espada Jr.,
sure.
A senator of great notoriety, famously kind of flouted the rulings of the Board of Elections for a long, long mm-hmm. time before he finally came a cropper due to federal investigation more than anything else. But what we have, what we learned today, being Tuesday, is that this panel is going to be much more broad in its scope, that while the operations of the Board of Elections will be within its ambit, it can really look at pretty much anything it wants to, anything touching upon, you know, state government's operations, which means it can look at member items, it can look at appropriations that somebody might insert into a budget bill, it can look at the existing penalties for corruption or for electoral law violations. So it can look at all those things, and it has subpoena power, which is significant. I mean, Moreland panels always have subpoena power, but the governor has kind of taken the extra step here by allowing the attorney general, by essentially, handing that power to the attorney general and allowing the attorney general, really requiring the attorney general, according to the executive order, to turn all these members of the Moreland panel into deputy attorneys general, which is really, it's a bit of a super-powered Moreland commission, I think you can probably say. We're still, of course, trying to figure out the ramifications of what this means, and I'm sure lawmakers will have certain feelings, or their counsel's office will have certain feelings about what this means. The question was asked in the press conference today, does this mean that lawmakers could be subpoenaed if they refuse to respond to an invitation, that they could be compelled to come and give testimony, that, for example, legislative documents could be subpoenaed as well? The Moreland panel has the power to do that. And the governor and the attorney general said, oh, yeah, absolutely. That's, as they put it, a matter of settled law. Once again, lawmakers might feel differently.
There are a few lawyers in the legislature.
Lots of them, and very well recompensed as well. What the governor's office says is that previous court decisions have held that local officials, that political parties have all been forced to respond to subpoenas issued by Moreland panels. And so it's going to be a fascinating drama to watch. What the governor has said is that this panel is supposed to have a preliminary report done by the end of this year and its final report complete by the end of 2014, which, you being a smart guy, I know you know, is an election year. Yes. It's worth noting that the legislature can do things, the governor can do things. All the Moreland Commission will be able to do is issue a report and make recommendations
right.
to the legislature. In other words, they can't change the laws. They can't stiffen penalties at the Board of Elections. They have no kind of legislative power whatsoever. Their findings have been used in the past by governors to apply pressure on lawmakers to change the system. But in terms of actual power, their powers are investigative. They are in no way legislative.
Now, we got to get into naming the folks who are the main people on this panel, because I think the folks out there will want to know these names. And one of them that is part of this is also the Albany DA, David Storr, sitting there next to Attorney General Schneiderman.
Yeah, it was quite remarkable to see in the Red Room, and there was a remote broadcast of, I think, about a dozen other members who were down in New York City. But today in the Red Room, you had the governor sitting right there. You had Attorney General Schneiderman.
Not the best of friends.
No. They have, I think it's probably fair to call it a collegial but sometimes chilly relationship mm-hmm. between the two of them.
And, of course, the governor was attorney general before.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, that's kind of as it should be. They are separately elected constitutional
sure.
officers with their own roles. And directly next to A.G. Schneiderman, to his right, I think it was, you had District Attorney David Soares of Albany County, who, of course, because his jurisdiction includes the Capitol and the Capitol complex, he has direct jurisdiction over what goes on in state government.
And he made news on this program when Alan asked him about this very issue. Should you have the power as the district attorney in Albany to investigate the legislature? And he made some rumblings about it. And it seems like on some level, the governor has responded to that.
Well, yeah, it would have been very difficult for the governor to freeze him out in this effort, considering that there are lots of other district attorneys who are part of this panel. The panel is about two dozen people. I would say district attorneys make up maybe about a third, maybe a little bit more than that.
And William Fitzpatrick is one of these lead guys, right?
Right, from Onondaga County. He is one of the three co-chairs. He is a Republican. He turned out for the unveiling of sort of the last and most important pieces of the governor's legislative, you know, his stymied legislative agenda, and famously said in that press conference that he had been in Washington, D.C., during the Watergate scandal, and he quoted, I think it was John Dean, informing President Nixon that there was, quote, a cancer on the presidency. And what Fitzpatrick said in that press conference was that the corruption scandals of the past couple of months have put a cancer on the state legislature. And today, he said, in explaining what the Moreland panel was going to do, he quoted Deep Throat and said, we're going to follow the money. And that, of course, is that's going to be a big trail.
There's something else he said, too. He said he had been hearing that people were shocked and surprised that this was all happening. And he sort of thought, why would you be so shocked and surprised
right.
after all this opportunity, you know, these people being paraded, many in handcuffs, going to jail, and then, you know, this package of reforms is put out there, you don't do anything with it, and the governor threatens you, and now he delivers. Why are you shocked?
Yeah, exactly. How anybody could be shocked with the idea that you need to do more, it's quite beyond me. One thing that's worth noting, we were talking about kind of the subpoena powers and the fact that the governor has pulled in the AG in this kind of prominent way. This represents a real turnaround for Governor Cuomo, who, after he became governor, when he was asked about whether the AG should be handed a kind of greater role in public corruption, he said, oh, you know, there are constitutional reasons why we can't do that. And he was asked about it by our own Jimmy Vielkind from the Times Union in the press conference. And what the governor said was, I thought, very telling. He said, the problem has gotten worse. In other words, his reading of the law has become perhaps slightly more expansive because he thinks that he needs a bigger tool to deal with this kind of thing.
And you need all the players involved in order to get real reform.
Yes, exactly.
Here's the really interesting thing about this. The governor has $22 million in his war chest, in his campaign war chest. Dean Skelos, the Republican leader in the Senate, in responding to this, said he hoped that the governor hadn't already written the report. And the governor, there where he was also asked about whether, you know, he's open to this scrutiny. And he said yes.
Yes, absolutely. What else could he say? You know, yeah, the governor has a very big war chest. And the governor basically says, bring it on, to quote another elected official. You know, my fundraising, my campaign organization can stand up to this kind of scrutiny. You know, can yours?
Question. It's a real challenge, isn't it? I mean, there's always the potential for someone to be hoisted on their own petard.
Sure. And in fact,
the Republicans certainly aren't going to let up on this if they see gold in them their hills to question one of his donors or something.
Right. Especially because, as noted, we're coming into a campaign season, without a doubt. But the governor has said, and he was responding to Dean Skelos, the Republican Senate leader's comments, that he hoped this wouldn't be a witch hunt.
Yes.
And what the governor said is, yeah, well, you call something a witch hunt when there are no witches there. He said almost in a breaking news kind of way, I've got news for you. There weren't any witches in Old Salem. And for anybody to claim that there isn't public corruption, that there aren't elected officials out there with skeletons in their closet, is ridiculous.
We're talking with the state editor of the Albany Times Union, and that is Casey Seiler. And Casey, we've been talking about this Moreland Act Commission. There's someone else on this list, a name that might have been the preferred choice for attorney general by Governor Cuomo, and that's Kathleen Rice.
Yeah, Kathleen Rice, district attorney from out on Long Island, is also one of the three co-chairs of the panel. She has a very good relationship with the governor. Many people saw her as his kind of favored candidate in 2010 for attorney general. Of course, Eric Schneiderman pulled it out in a very tough primary race. And the governor has turned to her for lots of tasks like this before, but I think this is probably the biggest one.
JCOP, the Joint Commission on Public Integrity.
Yes,
Ethics. Ethics, yeah. Excuse me. The Joint Commission on Public Ethics.
Otherwise, it would be JCOPE.
Yeah, JCOPE.
Yes.
And, of course, we've all heard the J joke. Is it no teeth? Is it really going to do anything? Where do they factor in all this?
Well, the interesting thing is that this is being rolled out only days or maybe even hours, as far as we know, before JCOPE unveils its online gallery of disclosure statements from state lawmakers and a wide range of other public officials. These are the much more granular, detailed public disclosure records that, for example, will require lawmakers who are attorneys to disclose who their clients are. They will have to disclose in a much more detailed way investments, business investments by family members, that kind of thing. Those are
Is
all
it still ranges?
Be,
Is it a range of money?
It's still ranges, but the ranges are no longer as laughable as they used to be. Instead of...
Yeah, give us an example.
You know, it used to be... I'm making this up, but it used to be, for example, like $50,000 to $100,000 or like more than $100,000 or something like that.
So,
now
it's $100,000 versus, you know, $20 million.
Yeah, now it's much more granular, and I think that the largest gap is, I'm not even sure, but I think it's, you know, they go up in increments of $25,000, $50,000 and then kind of
hundreds of thousands.
You're
saying it's more detail, we'll have a better sense, closer to the market.
You're not going to know the exact dollar figure, but you will know in a much more detailed way the specific range of dollars that public officials are making from their various
business interests. Still ridiculous that they can't do math and give us the exact amount, though, don't you think?
It is kind of, it would be a little bit nicer to know. I think their argument there is that, well, geez, if I'm off by a decimal point, am I going to be hauled before the Moreland Commission, perhaps? But yeah, it does seem, it seems ridiculous that, I mean, we have to do that for our taxes. They have to do it for their taxes as well. Why can't it be a detailed disclosure? But what we're going to have is more information than we had before about, for example, the legal career of Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, who is of counsel at Whites and Luxembourg, a prominent Manhattan personal injury firm. We're going to know more about the clients of Dean Skelos, the aforementioned Senate Republican leader, who is also an attorney. So it's going to be very interesting.
And presumably, as good reporters as we hope we are, we can follow those dots in some level to perhaps even attach it to legislation.
Well, yeah, as reporters, but also as citizens. You know, I think anybody out there who's listening, I would encourage all the kids out there in Radio Land to go to the J-COPE site this week. Once again, we're talking on Tuesday, but as far as I know, J-COPE planned to put it out, if not today, within the next couple of days, that all of a sudden this kind of gallery of disclosure forms will be unveiled. So you can go and find out exactly where your lawmaker is getting the money that they don't get from you through their legislative salary. And if you want to follow the money, it's going to be a much more detailed map to do that than we've had before.
Hasn't the argument always been, Casey Seiler, that some have made this argument, that if the legislators were full-time and didn't have law firms and other businesses to which they can send business to because of their role as legislators, that we might have less of this?
Yeah, that argument has been made. The argument has also been made that they shouldn't be in Albany nearly as much as they are now. You know, now we've got a six-month session. There are other people who say, geez, can't we move to a unicameral legislature?
Uh-huh.
Can't we move to a legislature that only meets every 2 years instead of every year for 6 months? So you can go either way. And if you look nationwide, you can see examples that work and examples that don't work of both cases. One thing I know is that if you made it a full-time legislature, I think you would immediately eliminate a lot of people who would say, you know, even if you amped up the salary beyond what it is now, which is already very, very good for a part-time job, if you increased it, you still would miss out on a wide range of people who would say, look, I can't set aside my career for 2 years to just pursue public service. You know, it's not like being a governor. It's not like being a senator. It's not like being a congressman or something like that.
Yeah, but if you work for a nonprofit, it's part of the mission.
Right, that's all.
And you don't get paid a lot of money because you believe in the mission. Shouldn't you believe in the mission as a public citizen, as a legislator?
The governor who mentioned not-for-profits as the potential targets of the Moreland Commission would say there are lots of not-for-profits out there that do fairly well for themselves.
Well,
not here at WAMC, I'm sure.
Of course not. But I know, as many of us tend to get somewhat cynical after all these years about how these things work. So, for example, as a Moreland Act Commission, they come up with a report, say they come up with a number of recommendations to change the law. Will the law be changed? Will this, and this Alan says this all the time, legal bribery, which is sort of getting what you can get legally in
pay to play.
Pay to play.
Yep.
Will that be affected? Can you see that actually being affected in the end?
Once again, it depends on where the Moreland Commission finds the money leading to, how deftly they can kind of make that case. It depends on the quality of the messaging that will come from the Moreland panel and the eventual messaging that will come from the people who are recipients of that report, meaning good government groups, sympathetic lawmakers, the governor's office, of course, and how much I think these recommendations become part of the public policy debate statewide in the 2014 elections.
And how litigious can this get?
Oh, it can get very litigious.
I mean, you could have a number of lawsuits.
Sure. The first time a sitting lawmaker is probably from either party is hit with an invitation to come appear before the Moreland Commission, turns it down, and then that turns into a subpoena, I think it's quite likely that you'll see this end up in court. And of course, if it goes all the way up to the Court of Appeals, you have appointees on the Court of Appeals from the governor. You've got Chief Judge Jonathan Lippman, who is a childhood friend, I believe, of Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. So you've got all kinds of lines of influence and interest there.
And will they have to be, you know, when they, like in elections, when they have, it's timely and you have to get it counted, you know, the votes counted in a situation like this, is it going to be bogged down for years in litigation, or will there be a sort of a necessity for a judge to rule on something like this?
Oh, I think there's going to be a necessity for a judge to rule. And of course, the governor has said that he wants the final report by the end of the preliminary report by the end of this year, final report by the end of 2014. There's nothing at all from him saying, geez, this has been so bogged down in litigation that we've got to push it. Well, I'll give him another 6 months. I'll give him another year, you know, if, of course, that's presuming that Governor Cuomo is reelected next year, which looks at this point like a very good shot. But anything can change in this crazy world of ours.
Well, of course, we're down to a minute. It went so fast, but very quickly. There is unfinished business, a major piece, which is the Women's Equality Act. It's gotten bogged down with 9 points in the Senate. The whole 10 points in the Assembly went through. And the Republicans don't seem to really want to move on it, even though they're being pushed. What do you think is going to happen with this?
I think eventually that there will be give on the part of the Assembly Democrats before the end of the year to come back and pass the 9 bills that the Senate passed.
Minus
the abortion plank, because it was clear from the procedural vote in the Senate that there are not yet 32 votes for choice in the state Senate. That will be a major, you know, campaign rallying cry for Democrats next year. But I think that eventually Speaker Silver and the Assembly Democrats have to come back and pass those and settle for 9/10 of a loaf. They will, however, make Republicans squeal over the course of the next weeks and months, especially as you get, for example, this case in Texas of these bills being passed that greatly restrict abortion. Every time an action like that takes place, you're going to see a press release from the Assembly Democrats saying, we voted for choice. The Senate Republicans did not. And we're your buddies. We're your friends. They will be saying to women's groups. But eventually, I think they will come back and pass the 9 bills. The governor believes that, too.
We've been talking with Albany Times Union state editor Casey Seiler. You can always go to timesunion.com to see that paper. It's always a pleasure to have you in here, Casey. You are right at the edge of all of it, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time out today to talk to us.
My pleasure. Always great to come by.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gastina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.